Good afternoon, everyone. According to my clock, it's 1 o'clock, so we'll go ahead and get started. And I think folks are continuing to join the call. So we appreciate you being with us today. Hopefully you made it through the severe weather overnight and this morning. I know it was a little scary coming into work today. It's like driving down a river instead of a highway. So hopefully there wasn't much damage in our region and everyone is safe. I think the sun has come out this afternoon, at least in West Asheville, so maybe it's all behind us. But welcome to our weekly Land of Sky Regional Council COVID-19 call. We have been hosting these calls since April to try to keep our region informed about what's going on in our region, especially in our response to COVID-19, but also to help us share information, best practices, about current and emerging issues in our region. Just a few housekeeping matters before we get started. These calls are recorded. We try to post those on our Land of Sky website at landofsky.org. There's a COVID page there, and we try to keep an archive of that. So if you want to access those, you're welcome to do that. I think the setting for today's call does allow you to unmute yourself. Let me make sure that I setting. Well, I am, so I'm going to let you do that today, but encourage you to keep yourself muted unless you need to speak. If you have questions, encourage you to submit those through the chat function if possible. And you can, if you have a question, you can also email me at nathan@landofsky.org. And you could text me at 828-768-3216 if for some reason you can't use the chat. That's 828-768-3216. We'll begin the call as we normally do. We're honored to have the governor's office with us. Drew Christie, representing Governor Roy Cooper in Western North Carolina, has always been really kind to share with us, and we're very grateful for Drew's support and leadership. I know the governor had some additional announcements yesterday, had a press conference. And so I'll turn it over to Drew to give us a report from Governor Cooper.
Thank you so much, Nathan, for having me. And again, always thank you to Land of Sky Regional Council for hosting these meetings. As per usual, I'll start off going over numbers. And then, as Nathan said, the governor had a press conference yesterday, and I'll highlight some of the stuff he covered yesterday during the press conference. As of today, we have a total of 269,021 total cases of COVID-19. There have been almost 4 million tests complete, 3.95 million to be exact. There are currently 1,181 people hospitalized. So all of these numbers are tracking high. They have come down a little bit over the past couple of days. I think we were sitting just over 7% the past couple of days, a percent positive. We're down about 6.5%, which again, we want to see those numbers tracking down. We want to see them, you know, down 5% or below. And so we're still high, but you know, that's, you know, a downward trend is always good. But again, we want to see those numbers 5% or lower for positivity rates. Looking at statewide unemployment, as of yesterday, there have been just over 1.3 million claimants. And there have been almost $8.5 billion paid out unemployment benefits, 8.468 billion. And there have currently been 914,551 claimants paid, and there's only just shy of 11,000 claimants pending resolution for state benefits. So we're tracking in the right directions there with unemployment benefits. You know, that's moving in the right direction there. So what I'd like to talk about now is what the governor announced yesterday. So yesterday, Governor Cooper signed an executive order to strengthen eviction protections and help more North Carolinians stay in their homes during the pandemic. Approximately 300,000 to 400,000 households across North Carolina are currently unable to pay rent, and an estimated 240,000 eviction filings will be submitted by January 2021 without the governor's executive order. The CDC order, which protects residential tenants from evictions for non-payment of rent, that was kind of step one. But there have been a lot of confusion over who this order protects, who the CDC order protects, and has caused inconsistent enforcement and unwanted evictions in some parts of the state. Governor Cooper signed Executive Order 171, which requires landlords to make residential tenants aware of their rights under the CDC order. For eviction actions commencing after Executive Order 171, landlords must give residents the option to fill out a declaration form before starting any eviction actions. The order ensures that recipients of the North Carolina Housing and Opportunities and Prevention of Evictions, the HOPE program, are still able to qualify. So 2 weeks ago, Governor Cooper launched the $117 million NC HOPE program that provides assistance to eligible low and moderate income renters experiencing financial hardships due to the pandemic by making direct payments to landlords and utility companies. And that portion is crucial there. A lot of people think that the NC HOPE program is giving the money directly to the tenants, but no, the NC HOPE program is actually giving the money directly to the landlords to help the landlords themselves and also help the renters. So far, the NC HOPE program has received almost 23,000 eligible applicants or applications as of yesterday. And so people can call 211 or they can go to nc211.org/HOPE. And so that's very crucial. And, you know, that money, that $117 million, comes directly from the CARES Act funding. So that money is limited. So we encourage people to go in and apply now if they can. And so I don't have anything else, Nathan. I'd be happy to take any questions if there are any, but I'll turn it back over to you.
Drew, if possible, could you add the links to those programs in the chat? So if folks have any questions, they can access that. And I know you're always very accessible so that to help individuals move forward. So if you have any questions of Drew, please reach out to us and we'll get that contact connect you with Drew, or you can just reach out to him directly if you have his email. Drew can share that. So thank you so much. We appreciate the update from the governor's office and all the work that you're doing to keep us informed and make us aware of the opportunities available to help folks in these very challenging times. We're honored today to have Clark Duncan, Senior Vice President of the Asheville Chamber of Commerce. Clark serves as the head of economic development with the Chamber and the Economic Development Coalition of Asheville and Buncombe County. And also Deborah Wright, the Vice President for Economic and Workforce Development and Continuing Education at AB Tech, to speak about the announcement that was made last Thursday regarding Pratt & Whitney's location of a new facility in our region. So I will turn it over to Clark Duncan. And Clark, if you do need to share any information, we are allowing you to screen share. So if you need to do that. But thank you so much, Clark, for joining us, and then I'll turn it over to Deborah.
Great. Yeah, Nathan, if you don't mind, I might just sort of share with the family and partners that are on the call today off the cuff. Let me start with my appreciation to you for having me and, of course, for your support over the roller coaster over the last 18 months. These, you know, announcements are formulaic sometimes, but they always fill me with gratitude for the partnerships that drive economic development in North Carolina and especially in Western North Carolina. Of course, the support of the state, the governor's office, the General Assembly, EDPNC. Thrilled to have Deborah Wright on the phone with us today. I'm very excited about the role that AB Tech is playing as a part of the success of this project. Of course, our county commission, North Carolina's Golden Leaf Foundation. Can't say enough about private sector involvement from a partner like Biltmore Farms and Duke Energy. And lastly, I think my colleague and partner in crime, Ryan Regan, is on the call as well. And there he is, who brought this home with a newborn infant in one hand and a wife with a broken arm in the other. So he's doing double and triple duty these days.
Go, Ryan. Woo, woo.
I thought I'd start with, honestly, something that's a little over my head, but I think is super interesting, and that is the products that are going to be manufactured under roof. So the planned Buncombe County facility is going to produce component parts for commercial and defense aerospace industry engines, and specifically next generation turbine airfoils and advanced castings. So here's how I would visually describe that for you. A geared turbofan has a gearbox between the front fan and the shaft to the engine core. And by decoupling those, you separate the speed of the fan from the speed of the core, and the engine can safely drive a larger volume of air through the engine while the low pressure compressor in the turbine blades can spin even faster. And what that allows it to do is boost fuel savings for the jet engine by about 20%. And so it's that turbine airfoil in the hottest, fastest part of the engine that they're gonna be making here, which is important because it's one of the most sensitive parts of the engine. It's one of the most highly engineered parts of the engine, which impacts, I think, the skill and the problem solving of the workforce that they need to be successful. These components are gonna sell both into commercial business as well as defense engine lines. But it's thought that this facility will largely, the majority of those product lines are gonna go into the commercial sector. And that's largely due in part to a lot of the consolidation we see happening, for example, at Boeing, that's transitioning a lot of work out of Washington State into Charleston, just a short few hours down the road from us. To talk a little bit about why I think Western North Carolina was successful here, I want to share with you maybe a little bit of the vision for what they're hoping to accomplish with this new facility. And it's very much, from our first conversation, been explained to us as a play to modernize their facilities for the next generation of Pratt & Whitney. I think any of my peers here on the call that interact with regional manufacturing, you might be familiar with the term Industry 4.0 or the fourth industrial revolution, but it's really about this sort of combination of technology and advanced manufacturing and data analytics, automation on the shop floor and the jobs of tomorrow. And that's really what they're hoping to see this new facility be. So to understand why Western North Carolina, certainly cost is always going to be a motivator. The state of North Carolina continues to have the lowest corporate income tax of any state that requires it in the union. And so that opens a lot of doors for us. Logistics, I think, can't be ignored. They look very specifically in Georgia, Tennessee, South Carolina, North Carolina. I would assume proximity to Boeing and other suppliers there being key. for this audience, I can't say enough about the amount of time and depth of study that Ryan and our research team spent with the company on understanding the broad and deep labor pool of your mountain area region, Nathan. And understanding, for example, the precision machining skills, understanding what other companies are successful in this region, and not just in aerospace, but in automotive, for example, we see a tremendous amount of transferable skill. And lastly, I think there was a little bit of shared vision for a company that was looking for a site that could be the launch pad for their next generation of both product lines and facilities. I think they pretty quickly saw a lot of synergy with the site I'm going to share with you at Biltmore Park West, which anyone locally knows that this will be the first investment in that site. It is raw land. And I think they very much appreciated being part of that vision for economic development in Western North Carolina as well. By the way, Arthur, I'm going to call you out. Arthur's telling me I was pretty close on my description to the engine, but I always defer to the scientist to correct me. So Arthur, I guess I owe you a beer. Let me talk for a moment then about the development itself, Nathan. I think we have likely driven past the site on a daily basis and never known it was there. But from a bird's eye view, Biltmore Park West is about a 1,000-acre opportunity that is bound on the east by I-26 and on the west by the French Broad River. Pratt & Whitney's facility will grow in size to about 1 million square feet and sit initially on a 100-acre site that will be the first to open up what we're calling Biltmore Park West and South Buncombe. And while the design is still underway, the company has stated an objective to study and hopefully achieve LEED Gold certification, which I think is exciting for all of us, that call Western North Carolina home. And I think a reflection of the company's long-term investments in sustainability. In terms of the built environment, we are going to be investing significantly in partnership with the Golden Leaf Foundation and then the private sector through Biltmore Farms in the development of a 5-lane bridge that will access the site, connecting Brevard Road or Highway 191 over to the site. If you're familiar with the Arboretum stoplight on 191, that will become a four-way intersection where you can take a left or suppose a right, depending on what direction you're approaching from, over across the river into the new Commerce and Industrial Park. The bridge was actually permitted in spring of this year in an effort to line up a series of timelines, and we anticipate construction to begin as early as Q1 of 2021. And, you know, lastly, Nathan, I think from a significance perspective, not just to Buncombe County, but to all the regional partners on this call, I think it's important to recognize the feather in the cap that this is for what I think is the quiet emergence of aerospace as one of the fastest growing sectors of manufacturing in Western North Carolina. And it's not just GE, but it's avionics folks like Kierfot, TE Connectivity making electrical harnesses for helicopters and jets, Mills Manufacturing that's been here for generations, Survival Innovations over in Henderson County making safety equipment for helicopters. And then from a regional perspective, I think the impacts on the depth of our workforce are going to be widely spread. And I'll let Deborah talk a little bit about our intentions to invest in that workforce training. And then obviously, because we're economic developers, I'm incredibly excited about what I see as the potential for follow-on investment. The more this group is successful in making our existing industry employers successful, the more we continue to get looks from the national and international business community. And I think this will certainly encourage that trend that we've seen easily for the last decade or more here in our region. I think it will follow in the supply chain for aerospace and aviation, but I think we'll also see a number of industries that see synergistic opportunity with the transferable skills in heavy machining operations. So I guess I'll stop there. I don't want to ramble too long. Nathan, I'm glad to take any questions that you or this group may have.
Well, Clark, let's hear from Deborah, and then we'll take questions. And really appreciate you giving us that perspective. And sort of, I know you've been working on this a long time with you and your team. Ryan, I'm glad you're able to multitask and take care of a lot of different things. So and I know it really took a lot of community partnerships and that y'all worked with not only in Buncombe County, but throughout the region to help support this project. Deborah, we're glad that you're with us today. I think I need to start sending you a check because I guess this is the second meeting this week that you've shared with us. So
yes, I will be checking the mail. Thank you for that, Nathan.
Yeah, absolutely. So just check the mail and it'll be a big check. If it's all from right. me, unfortunately, if it's from me personally, it might bounce a little bit, but we're glad you can join us and certainly give us the perspective on workforce because not to be overly focused on that, but I really believe workforce development is economic development and the communities that best develop their talent are the ones that are going to be most successful. So as the community college serving Buncombe County, y'all are taking the lead on that. So give us an update on how you and your team are approaching this project and the partnerships with AB Tech.
Absolutely. And thanks again for the invite. I can say this project gives new meaning to the phrase, it takes a village. I have been privileged since my first day hitting the ground. Actually, it started in the interview process, hearing about this big secret Project Ranger. And then, of course, in taking the job, knowing how important it was to this region and what a key role that AB Tech would be playing alongside with all the other people who really pulled together to make this happen. I mean, I thought Kevin and I were doing a lot of work. Kevin was doing a lot of the heavy lifting. He is our director of workforce training, but all of the people around actually gave me a great opportunity to meet some of the community leaders before I even understood what the community was about. So I have appreciated this project and the scope of it. So our task now is to find these qualified and develop these qualified people to fill these jobs. And now that we don't have to be so hush-hush about it, we can actually get out there and start drumming up a little bit more. And in the background, we've already started to talk to people and build those partnerships so that we can drive people through the training and get them in line for some of the more advanced training that will come later. So Kevin is on vacation, couldn't join us today. I think he was exhausted and needed to just go fishing for a while. But he did leave me with a few notes that I want to share with you. So our plan is in developing the talent needs for this big endeavor is two-pronged. And so one is to work hard now this year to develop a pipeline of skilled workers so that when they're ready to hire, these people can move to the front of the line. So two major programs that we offer have already been endorsed by Pratt & Whitney, and that is a 15-week fundamentals of machining class that we offer. and an 8-week certified production technician class. So anyone who completes one of those classes prior to the actual recruiting efforts will be guaranteed an interview as long as they make it through the initial screening process. And so in the coming weeks, we hope to get more details about the initial screening process. We are working to make sure that all of our community members, including those underrepresented minorities, are prepared to go to the, you know, to be in line for these great paying jobs. And we really want to start the process as soon as possible. And we can do that now because we have gear funding, which will actually pay for this training. So not only can they go through the training to get these great jobs, they can go through the training and have it paid for through some other resources that we already have at the college. We realize that we probably can't do all the training. So we are definitely looking at going through the details of that and sharing that so that some of our partners can help get people ready as well. And so that will be something that Kevin and I will be working on so that we have some continuity and some consistency in that training as it takes place. The second approach is going to be through our customized training program. So we have been developing the training project for a couple of months now, and that will be continuing as we look at what the needs assessment results are. So once we get down to the details of recruiting activities, pre-employment assessment training, and a comprehensive post-hire training from Pratt & Whitney, we'll be able to put more legs on that and speak more to the community through open house events, info sessions, and whatever sources that we can just to get the word out in the community about how this is going to work. Right now, if you can imagine, we're working to understand their hiring plan, to get the job descriptions from them, the skills needed to perform all the various jobs that are within this very high-tech production that Clark just described, whatever that little widget is called in the middle of the two fans. Is that what you said, Clark? So there may, yeah, there may be some travel in our future so that we can go and look at some of those processes and then meet with some of our trainers so that the customized training, which will be more advanced, will be detailed and the curriculum will be developed for that. As well as subject matter experts, we'll be looking at hiring trainers, content developers, instructors. We at AB Tech are already restructuring our advanced manufacturing center in terms of our personnel so that we can free Kevin up, who will have a lead role in developing the training facility that's going to be built. That is where we will do more of the advanced training once that facility is up and running. Meanwhile, in our new advanced manufacturing center here on campus, we'll be able to start with those training courses that I already mentioned. And then once that center is built, we will do that training for Pratt & Whitney, but we'll also have the opportunity to train other workforce development efforts at that site as well. So we're looking forward to just having a nice presence in that area of town. So I think that's it. We're getting the details on the facility and the training facility and yeah, still a lot of moving parts, but it's exciting that at least we don't have to whisper anymore and we can talk about it and really engage the greater community in this effort of how we can identify people in the community, drive them toward these training courses, these initial foundational courses, because it's going to be important to get in that line that you have this as a background, and we want everybody to have the opportunity for these jobs. So I'm excited about that. Oh, you're muted.
Apologize. I need to be muted all the time. I would sound a lot more intelligent. Deborah, thank you for giving us update, and I we'll get into this, I guess, a little later on the questions, but I anticipate, and I think certainly I would assume from AB Tech and Asheville Chamber and all other partners, we would anticipate not all of the 800 workers would come from the AB Tech service area. So you'll probably be working closely with your community colleges in the region to as well. And I think you may have alluded to that as far as the conversations that you're in process of having to develop more partnerships to meet this talent demand.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We understand that, especially with COVID, we are already experiencing how we have to downsize our classes so that we can social distance within that space. So once we get the curriculum, and again, and we can ensure that continuity of instruction, we will certainly have to engage our other partners to help get some of the people through that training. And we know that not everybody is going to get through that. So we have to even have more people on the ready. But absolutely, once we get a plan, we will be having those meetings to see what people are capable of handling at their facilities in terms of that training and get started with that. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, I know one of the small roles Mountain Area Workforce Development Board played in this project is we submitted a letter working with Maureen Little, who oversees customized training and workforce development with the North Carolina Community College System. And certainly, you know, the work of all our community colleges, that's one of the strengths of our state, and hopefully that helps our existing employers as well as companies locating here. So we're so blessed to have AB Tech and all your other colleges to be a part of this. Clark, and just before I get started, if anyone has any questions, you're welcome to enter those in the chat. So please do that. I guess I'll start off with, you know, this is a big project, and our region is around 500,000 in the metro. And oftentimes these large projects, it's harder for us to compete against larger metros of 1 million, 2 million people. So, and certainly don't disclose any state secrets, but give us your perspective on why Asheville and Buncombe County in Western North Carolina was the right fit for this project in the view of Pratt & Whitney.
Well, I'll answer the question through the lens that I think you asked it, Nathan, which is it's certainly an outsized project for what usually is, you know, is in our project pipelines, right? Any county here in Western North Carolina. And we knew we were competing against some world-class, much larger metro areas. I really think it ties down to, ties back to not just the existing regional workforce, and we all know our residents, you know, cross boundaries to probably 10 different counties on a daily basis, but the idea that we are a growing region and one that continues to attract you know, the best and brightest into our region, whether they are born here and choosing to stay here or come back or come for the first time, I think that sense of being in a dynamic region where workforce wants to grow and is growing is incredibly important. And 800 jobs in the context of, you know, sort of our pre-COVID employment market was just shy of 200,000 here in the four county metro, employing just shy of 25,000 in manufacturing. And so when you look at integrating 800 jobs over, you know, roughly the next 7 years, that's not an overwhelming influx. I think given our sort of steady and moderate growth rates, those will be achieved with some facility. So I think understanding that history of growth kept us in the running and also eliminated a number of other communities that maybe didn't have that kind of dynamism to share in terms of growing their workforce.
Absolutely, you know, pre-COVID, we were adding 3,000 to 5,000 jobs annually, in some cases more. So, you know, in that perspective, and you touched on this, can you give us a timeline when that first hiring should start? I know they're, you know, just early in the construction phase now, this facility, which would ultimately, I guess, be 1 million square feet, which if you look in context, that would be about the almost the size of an Asheville Mall or, you know, a very large other buildings that we have in our region. But give us some context on the timeline for hiring.
So Deborah, chime in here with me. I can tell you, Nathan, they anticipate the building will be open for operations in January of 22, which is an incredibly fast construction process. So I would anticipate hiring and training to start as early as the third quarter of next year. Deborah, is that consistent with what you all are hearing?
That is. And that's one of the reasons that we want to get as many people as possible through these different training, foundational trainings, because keep in mind, this is not the training for the specific jobs there. This is just foundational stuff that gets you in the line for hiring. So as you're checking off boxes, you don't want to get a no this soon in the process. So we really want to get the word out there to get the, you know, get people in line for some of this foundational stuff to even be considered. But we'll probably start that about 6 months out. And then we will be, in the meantime, looking at the detailed job description and stuff like that. I think another big part of this is to work on just, you know, the HRD part of this, you know, interviewing, resumes. There's a whole lot of other stuff outside of that that we really want to get people prepared for. So it's a little broader than just the technical stuff. It's the broader broader scope of the employment at this level. So we'll be working on that as well. In fact, I had a meeting just prior to this, and that's the partnership between the Chamber, YMI, and AB Tech that I mentioned, as they are looking to get people hired, driving them through our training program so that we can get them in line. So I think all these things are coming together, and we're lucky in this region to have so many resources to help people. We just got to get the people. So I'm excited. It's the fun stuff starts now.
Absolutely, Deborah. Clark, there's a question in the chat on the tentative schedule on the timing of construction. And I see you're responding to that. Have they already selected their contractor for the building or just initial site work right now?
So Biltmore Farms proactively began the grading earlier this year in addition to the bridge permitting process. So those two processes are underway. And as you crest the hill on 26, you can kind of see that initial disturbance off to the right. The construction, the CM has been named but not shared publicly. We expect that in the next couple of weeks. You know, we didn't touch much on the construction process, Nathan, but beyond the economic impact of the company jobs, we expect an additional 1,200 jobs to be created as a result of the construction process, which should be completed in, you know, 18 to 24 months, probably at final delivery. And those subs are going to be sought locally. I'm sure it's a national CM that's been selected. So we're in early conversations with the company to connect with the CM to have a supplier fair for local subs in the engineering and construction arena.
Thank you for that clarification. Here's another question. I think it was somewhat addressed, but will those trainings be, I think Deborah referred to some of the training that will, the fundamentals classes and a few other things that will happen on AB Tech site. But as part of this project, there will be a training facility, educational facility on site. Where individuals will be trained, is my understanding. Is that something y'all can elaborate on?
Yeah, so the initial training will actually start in our facility here on campus. So that takes place now. These are classes that are already available. People can sign up to you know, start with the next iteration of that. Once we move into the facility, that will be a more advanced level of training. And that's when we'll shift to some of the customized training based on the curriculum that that'll be developed between now and then. So yeah, we are more focused on those foundational trainings right now as the facility is being built. And then once all the machining and equipment is in the new facility, then the customized training will begin to get people familiar with that next level.
And we really, I guess, haven't spoken about our existing employers. And, you know, people, I don't think most folks don't realize our region's home to over 20,000 manufacturing jobs that have a just in direct wages over, around a $1.2 billion annual impact. So I think many don't understand how robust our region's manufacturing sector is. But for individuals that want to go into those roles now, since their hiring probably will be some time off, I just wanted to, you know, let folks know that there are jobs out there today for individuals going through those programs that Deborah mentioned. So we hope, people take advantage of that. And this is another talent workforce question. So we've talked about a lot of those jobs that maybe are more on the entry level or those that are on the shop floor. We have several universities represented on our call today. And do you have much detail you can provide on what additional skills individuals would need to have? I assume there'll be skill level and educational level that'll be really across the continuum for a project of this size.
You are correct. We don't have a lot of details yet outside of just trying to build that workforce pool at the entry level. But I imagine it will be across the continuum where engineers will be needed as well. As soon as we can start the work with HR, their HR, and get those job descriptions, then we'll know, because we also don't know how many of their own people will be relocating to the area. So those details will be forthcoming.
Thank you, Nathan. Deborah. Yes, sir, Clark, go ahead.
I was just going to add additional detail. So of those 800 new jobs, we understand 500 will be sort of in production-oriented roles, and the remaining 300 will be, you know, engineering, technology, and leadership roles.
So really, all across the educational gamut, skill levels, and other things. I think, you know, probably many of the jobs, though, and this is the misnomer, if someone's a very skilled machinist, that's a skill that I don't care how many college degrees you get, that's something that is not easily taught. So all these talent levels are very valuable and critical. Had a question about GE Aviation, and certainly GE is one of our premier employers, really impactful in our region. We know, you know, with Boeing and Airbus having some challenges, the entire aviation sector's been slowed down by COVID. But GE had added a tremendous number of jobs in our region, significant number of investments. Can y'all speak on how helpful it was it to have GE Aviation in our community when you're trying to recruit for this project?
Other
companies as well.
The company was indirectly very helpful for, you know, my 12 years on this team. Nathan, the company's been very generous in opening doors in their supply chain and helping introduce other projects and employers to why they are successful in Western North Carolina. And they've opened those doors for us around the world, and we're grateful for that. So we've spoken with the company, as you might expect. I placed personal calls to the site as well as their headquarters on Thursday afternoon. They were very congratulatory of the region. But I think it's indicative of their culture, which is wanting the community that they're in to be successful. I think we all recognize there will be, when any new job creation project is announced, there are a short-term shakeout in the labor market, but we hope a long-term growth in the workforce that results from the demand being created by the economic demand here.
Uh, And GE Aviation's been incredibly generous to our community, and we couldn't ask for a better partner than the team at GE Aviation. So I guess two final questions, and then we'll let everyone go. Number one, the success of this project, oftentimes the best asset your community has is your existing employers and those community assets. And to see a company like Pratt & Whitney, and hopefully they can be incredibly successful in our region, can you speak to the fact of how important it is for companies you work with that are looking at expansions or locations to see those existing industries be successful? And I won't say there's a snowball effect, but there tends to be the more those other companies are successful, it helps others be successful.
Yeah, 100%. You know, they check our references and then some, right? And we have to have relationships and successful local employers who not only are successful in their own right, but willing to share with other organizations how they're successful, what do they think of their local workforce, where they encounter challenges, how do they problem solve, how do they work around them, and how does the community support them? So early in our conversations, you know, Ryan facilitated a number of those off the record conversations with local employers, and those are critical to your success. So yes, Nathan, a very good reminder that economic development success always begins with taking care of those that are already here and thriving in Western North Carolina.
And final question, you know, look back at sort of the global aviation sector. You know, certainly COVID-19 has been really challenging for aviation. But what does this say? You know, Pratt and Whitney, I assume they wouldn't start on a project like this if they weren't bullish about the long-term prospects for aviation. So how do you look at that from that perspective? Because it sounds, I mean, they're making this investment not for next year or the next couple of years. You know, this kind of money and this commitment is probably, you know, for what they see on the long term. So I guess, could you finally just sort of speak to that? Because North Carolina does have a tremendous aviation sector, and we're glad to see that grow in our region as well.
Well, you're giving me flashbacks to some of the darkest days of the last year for us, Nathan. When we all entered sort of the uncertainty of the pandemic, this project was fairly close to announcement and went on a full pause for the better part of five to 6 months. And during that time, did a thoroughgoing evaluation of the damage being done to the commercial aviation sector, defense spending obviously not as impacted during these times, but our commercial air travel patterns are very different. And they, and I think most industry watchers now, are anticipating sort of the strength of the recovery back to sort of pre-COVID normals to actually be in 2023, which is interesting. And so when they came out of their pause, it was really almost with a renewed commitment to be prepared to meet that demand, right? So we now have a construction process, a training process, a hiring process, but their intent is to have this operational capacity in place to seize and grow their the return of the commercial markets in 22, 23, and 24.
Well, Clark, with that, thank you so much for joining us today. This project speaks volumes to the work of you and your team. You know, a lot of the things you work on, you know, most of us in the region may not even know about that, but, you know, it's great to see when you can make an announcement public. And we just really, I think that speaks volumes to the work of you and your team, the team Deborah, of those at AB Tech under your leadership, and Dr. Gossett, and just all the work in our region to bring this project to fruition. And I think someone mentioned, you know, actually when there's an announcement, that's actually when the real work begins. So, so there's a lot more work that we all have to do to help Pratt & Whitney be successful, in addition to our existing employers in our region, so they can we continue to grow and thrive here. So this is certainly a game changer for Western North Carolina. $68,000 average wage. I think a 50 or over a $50 million annual payroll at the after the project is fully operational. Major investment. So we're so glad to, you know, coming out of this pandemic to be in the midst of really challenging times, but to see that people still have faith in our region, faith in the state of North Carolina, and to move forward with these projects. So thank you all so much for being with us. If you have any questions, would like to reach out to me, you reach out to me at nathan@landasky.org. And I hope everyone stays safe and stays well, and have a great rest of your day. Again, go to landasky.org for any resources you may have, and we'll try to have the archive of all these calls on that site. So thank you so much. Have a great day. And again, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Nathan.
Thanks, Nathan.